Thank you, sir. Ladies and gentlemen, thank you for standing by and welcome to the Understanding the Equality Index conference call. At this time, all participants are on a listen-only mode. After the speaker's presentation, there will be a question and answer session. To ask a question during the session, you will need to press star 1 on your telephone. Please be advised that today's conference is being recorded. If you require any assistance, please press star 0. I would now like to hand the conference over to your speaker, Peter Berg from Great Lakes ADA Center. Thank you. Please go ahead, sir.
All right. Thank you and welcome, everyone, to the October ADA Audio Conference session. This is the kickoff to the 2019-2020 ADA Audio Conference season, and we are pleased that you are joining us here today. The Audio Conference series is a program of the ADA National Network. The ADA National Network consists of 10 regional centers that are funded through the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, Administration on Community Living, National Institute on Disability, Independent Living and Rehabilitation Research. To locate and find out information about the center that serves your state, you can visit adata.org. So again, we are pleased to have you joining us here today. We've got a great topic, a wonderful speaker. We are in October, National Disability Employment Awareness Month. We are beginning our march to the 30th anniversary of the ADA next July 26, 2020, will be the 30th anniversary of the signing of that historic civil rights legislation. And we know that, economic self-sufficiency was one of the designs and promises of the ADA, and that goes right along with employment, which we're going to talk about here today. And we, as I said, are pleased to have a wonderful presenter with us today. We have Becky Curran Kekula, and she is the Disability Equality Index Director, which is great when you have someone with the title of the session in their title, their job title. That works out well because today's session is Understanding the Disability Equality Index. Becky is with Disability In. You can find Becky's full bio on the ada-audio.org website. When you go to that page, click on speakers, and you can find her full bio and learn more about Becky from that. As a reminder, for those of you in the webinar platform, you can submit questions as Becky is speaking. If something pops in your head, go ahead and jot that down in the chat area and submit that, and the moderators, we will have that question, and when we get to the portion of today's session, when we have the Q&A, we will have that all ready to go. So with that, I will turn it over. I'm going to first welcome Becky and thank her for joining us today. And now we'll turn it over to Becky for her presentation. Welcome, Becky.
Thank you so much, Peter. Thank you all for having me here. I'm excited that it's National Disability Employment Awareness Month. It's a big month for our team at Disability In, and we're excited to share our knowledge about the Disability Equality Index with you guys today. So here's just a quick agenda where we're going to just go over what we'll talk about in this webinar. We're going to understand what is the DEI, how does the DEI evolve each year, what does it measure, which companies earned a top score in 2019, what does 100 mean exactly, we'll go over that, disability inclusion beyond diversity and inclusion, and upcoming dates for the DEI. We'll go through the whole timeline. Just starting off, I would like to introduce myself as a little person who identifies as being part of the disability community. Little people are included under the Americans with Disabilities Act. We do require accommodations in most scenarios. I was born and raised in Boston, Massachusetts. As a little person, I am the only little person in my family. My parents are average height, and they wanted to figure out exactly how to give me the best, most independent, fulfilling life possible. They went to a hospital a few months after I was born and were told to meet with a geneticist. When they got to the hospital, they checked in at the front desk, and the secretary said, follow the sign down the hall that says birth defects. My parents followed that sign and were very upset to follow that sign, lost a sense of trust in the organization, in the hospital, and they ended up convincing the hospital to change that sign from birth defects to genetics. And one of the reasons I bring up that story is because we want to change what people are seeing, and we want to make sure that people with disabilities know that they're included and they're meant to lead independent and fulfilling lives and have employment. We often talk about the underrepresented group of people with disabilities, and it's an untapped talent pool. My journey going to school seemed traditional, just like all of my average height, able-bodied peers. But then after I graduated college, I ended up in a situation where I needed to look for a job. I had several internship experiences that I thought could lead to an employment path, but I ended up sending out 1,000 resumes, and I went over on 100 interviews over the course of 6 months. Every time I would walk into a room, I would get judged based on my appearance, and I knew I wasn't getting the job based on someone's body language. And I really encourage others to be open, have that constructive conversation. There could have been times where I was a terrible interviewer, but I still didn't know why I didn't get the job and assumed that it was because of my appearance as a little person walking into a room interviewing for a job that I was qualified for, or I wouldn't have gotten the interview in the first place. A few months after going through all of those interviews, I ended up working with some temporary placement agencies that allowed me to find a route to employment. I was a temporary employee at a talent agency for 7 months, and after proving myself, I was able to be hired on full-time. This was a big achievement for me because I was just craving that employment route and that support, and to be able to support myself. After working at the talent agency as an assistant for 5 years, I was recruited to work at a studio, a television studio and casting, and I worked there for about a year. And after that, I decided to move back from California, where I was working, to Boston, and I launched a public speaking business, sharing my story, kind of dealing a little bit with the struggle of, have I reached this level of success in my career in order to help others, but I figured out that people wanted to hear my story, wanted to know about life as a little person, especially when it comes to finding employment. And after about a year and a half, I was recruited to work at the Actors Union, SAG-AFTRA, and I was there in the diversity department for about 3 years. And I had really been hoping to get a promotion after proving myself there, and it just wasn't an opportunity for me. And I was recruited after that to work for Disability Inn. And I am proud to say that after about a year working with Disability Inn, I started in November 2017, I was given my first promotion of my career. And now I'm proud to be a part of the Disability Inn team working on these efforts, helping companies get better at disability inclusion practices. And I really want to emphasize the importance of having open, transparent conversations so there can be a path for employees with disabilities, not just celebrating people getting hired. Let's celebrate helping people move up within an organization if they choose that route, or mentor people so they can find that next route to move up the ladder wherever it may be. Now we'll talk about this tool that I'm super passionate to be working on. I really enjoy working with Fortune 1000 and American Lawyer Magazine 200 companies to really encourage companies to take these questions, publicly available on our website, the disabilityequalityindex.org, and use them within their organization to to make change towards a more inclusive workplace for people with disabilities. So the DEI came about in about 2012. Business came to us and said, there's this tool out there from the Human Rights Campaign called the Corporate Equality Index. Why isn't there a tool for disability inclusion? And all of the programming influenced by Disability In is really what our partners asked for, what the demand is. And we decided, why don't we get a group together? We'll get business, they call themselves business advocates, and advocates within the disability community to work together on these questions for this tool that businesses can use to measure disability inclusion. We joined a partnership with the American Association of People with Disabilities, so AAPD and Disability In partnered on this tool, and we formed a committee, the Disability Equality Index Advisory Committee, who crafted all of these questions and used the Corporate Equality Index as a template. Same with eligibility criteria is very similar. But you will see there are some categories that are a little more specific to the disability community, and they may be different from those questions that you may see in the Corporate Equality Index. But we're very thankful for our partnership with the Human Rights Campaign to get us started on this powerful index. 2019 was the fifth official year. So the first official year after the pilot was in 2015. And we started out with less than 50 companies, and now we're at over 150. We had 180 participants in 2019. So it's a tool that companies take annually. We're currently in the registration period for 2020. So companies are committing to take this self-assessment tool. It's for businesses that have operations. They must have operations in the U.S., and they fill it out on behalf of their U.S. operations, except for there is one non-weighted category in the index called the non-U.S. operations category. And that's a place for companies to share what's going on outside of the U.S. But currently, it's mostly a U.S. business-based tool. And it provides an objective score and roadmap. So as companies fill this out, they start to understand where they need to make improvements. They identify some lower hanging fruit and some longer term goals. It's really a great way for companies to bring together a cross-functional team, sometimes starting with the employee resource groups, where there are people who are passionate about making the workplace more inclusive, who work across an organization. The index is meant to achieve the fact that you're holding yourself accountable as a company if you start taking it. Because if you're measuring it, you're getting people across all levels of the organization to start paying attention, change will happen. We're always sharing best practices. We're transparent about that. We don't want any one company to have to reinvent the wheel. It's really a great way to share best practices with one another. Companies within the same industries are sharing best practices because each company knows that they can't solve the unemployment problem for people with disabilities alone, and they want to work together to get better. There are industry trends that tend to show up. We did do some research with Accenture and American Association of People with Disabilities was our partner on the research. It analyzed the first 4 years of the Disability Equality Index data, and we were able to find trends that prove that there is an advantage for disability inclusion in the workplace, and it affects the bottom line of an organization in a positive way. Provides a roadmap. You're able to figure out which area you want to work on and focus on, and figure out when you want to get to that next goal. A lot of companies try to work towards that next survey year, but then other companies may think of a longer-term goal. But it's important to stay committed year after year so you can continue to earn credibility. And then it's also an indicator of long-term sustainability for investors. We're working closely with investors to pay attention. The companies that they invest in they're going to start holding accountable to make sure they're focusing on disability inclusion. As I had mentioned previously, we have a DEI advisory committee, which is 50% business and 50% advocacy. Business often calls themselves business advocates. And these questions are guided by the committee. This past year, 2019, was the first year where we had made significant changes, where some questions that were previously non-weighted became weighted. There are five categories that are weighted, and then there is the new non-U.S. operations category that's non-weighted, meaning it does not count towards your score. In 2018, for example, we introduced supplier diversity, its own category, and we did not have a weight for it in 2018, but in 2019, we added weight. We always promise that we will give companies at least a year advance notice if we're going to make any changes. So going into 2020, there will not be any weighted changes. We'll make sure that companies have enough advance notice. So here are the categories. We have culture and leadership, enterprise-wide access. I would say that one is definitely different than what you may see in the Corporate Equality Index because it measures building and website accessibility, employment practices, community engagement, supplier diversity, and non-U.S. operations. So culture, the subcategory culture within culture and leadership is worth 20 points, and all of the rest of the subcategories are worth 10 points. And it really proves that it starts with culture. We ask if the diversity and inclusion statement includes the word disability. We ask for backup information, like can you share a link? Can you share the paragraph where it includes that word? Unless disability is intentionally included in all of the diversity conversations, the community continues to feel left out. And it's important to make sure that the community feels included. Enterprise-wide access. A big piece there is website accessibility. We want to make sure that companies are paying equal attention to their external facing websites as they are internal facing websites. A lot of times companies are focused on attracting employees and they don't necessarily think about what if someone were to work at the company and want to access timesheets or payroll. So it's important to attract potential employees and customers in the same way. Employment practices, we talk about benefits, recruitment, making sure that people are asking candidates, whether it's while they're in the career portal or coming in for an interview, asking them if they need an accommodation for that process. And making sure people are paid fairly. We also ask the question if there are any employees who utilize supported employment. If you have a personality profile screening test, do you allow applicants the option to opt out of that test? And what's really important about that piece is that we want to make sure there are no barriers when it comes to the application and job interview and screening process for potential employees with disabilities who can add a lot of value to an organization. Ideally, a company does not have the profile screening test, but if they do, think about allowing someone the option to opt out of that as an accommodation. We also have an accommodation question or category or subcategory where we ask questions like, do you have an accommodation policy? Do your employees know where to find it? Do you have a process for when people are asking for accommodations? And then community engagement. Are you making your social media postings accessible? Adding descriptions to photos or captions to videos? Are you engaging with the disability community in different activities? And then supplier diversity. We're really stressing the importance of this category because it is another viable career path for people with disabilities. you can start your own business. 50% owned and operated by someone with a disability, or 51%, and you can get certified. Disability Inn has a 2-year certification. And then our corporate partners, our over 185 corporate partners, can see this hub of these disability-owned businesses, and they can start doing business together. Non-U.S. operations, as I had mentioned, some of the companies who've been participating in the DEI have only operations in the U.S., but there are some companies that have operations outside the U.S., and this is the time for companies to share best practices just so we can start navigating the landscape outside the U.S. Disability Inn did publish a global directory, which is public-facing on our website, where we profiled over 30 countries, and it describes the type of disability or what disability means in the country, what the laws are, and any resources that we may have. And that was also influenced by our corporate partners asking us to do research in different areas. As I mentioned, culture is 20 points. The rest of the categories and the subcategories within the categories are up to 10 points. And in each category, there's different methodology. Like, you must answer 4 of the weighted question sets in order to get the points for this category. You either answer 4 or 3, whatever it may be, and you get that 10 points. Or if you answer maybe 2, you would get 0 points for that category. So it's not an in-between. So it's either you're getting 10 points or the 20 points for culture, and it adds up to 100 if you get the most points you can in each of the categories. But there's also a lot of room for improvement because there are questions that are non-weighted, meaning they don't count toward your score, but they're still required. And if you answer no to some of those questions, you may still get the full points for the category. It's very important to know that we do not mean perfection when we talk about 100%. It means that you're practicing a lot of the best practices for disability inclusion, but by no means does it mean perfection. In 2019, these are the companies that scored 100. You can see some of these logos of these well-known companies that are committed to disability inclusion. And it's important to know that these companies know that they're on a journey and they still have a long way to go. We do award our top scoring companies at our conference every year in July. So this coming year, it'll be July 15th through 18th in Orlando. And we really want it, July 13th through 16th in Orlando. The 15th is when we announce the top scoring companies, and the 100 scoring companies are announced at our dinner. Again, just with 100%, it means that companies should be definitely proud of this, but not use the term perfection. They will get public recognition across their digital channels. We will promote on the Disability Insight, AAPD will promote, and then the company is also welcome to promote with their own press releases. Sometimes there's press that comes to our conference or may reach out to us wanting to promote the top scoring companies. A lot of times there may be different avenues within different states celebrating the companies that have headquarters there. It's great to see a lot of companies work together because they're wanting to compete with others in their industry, and this is an opportunity for them to be listed next to their industry peers and know that they're on this journey together. Having the Best Place to Work logo allows companies to feel proud and share it on their sites and their signature lines, so then they can attract potential talent with disabilities or consumers with disabilities. Companies we've seen have also included in their diversity and inclusion reports their corporate social responsibility reports and their ESG reports. Peter, do we want to play the video?
All right, we are going to play a short video here. For our folks on the telephone, you will not hear the audio just due to some logistic issues. For those of you in the webinar platform, the video is pushed out to your computer, and it will play on the video player on your computer. You need not, you do not need to do anything. It'll play on your player and dependent on the speed of your internet connection, but it will play on the internet, the video player that is selected as your default. For those of you who are connected and using assistive technology, so for screen reader users, once the video has stopped playing, you will need to do a the keyboard combination of Alt Tab to get the focus back into the webinar platform, and that will once the video has stopped playing. The video is captioned, and for those on the telephone, Becky will give up just a quick overview when the video has stopped running. So at this time, we will go ahead and play the video for you. All right, the video has completed. Again, for those of you screen reader users, Alt Tab will bring the focus back into the webinar room. And Becky, you can continue.
Thank you. So just for those of you who are on the phone, the video is about impact investing. Ted Kennedy Jr., who is the board chair of the American Association of People with Disabilities.
Becky, can you hold on? Hold on 1 second. We'll let the captioner get back and join us. Just 1 second. Our captioner is back. So go ahead and continue, Becky. Start over again, please.
Thank you. So for those of you on the phone who missed the video, it talks about the importance of impact investing, and it features American Association of People with Disabilities board chair Ted Kennedy Jr. He is a big partner in this journey with us, and he told us that we needed a business case for disability inclusion, and that's how we came about the partnership with Accenture. So the video also features Chad Jurdy from Accenture talking about the importance of disability inclusion within an organization. And then there's also New York State Comptroller Tom DiNapoli, who talks about the importance of disability inclusion and how he's going to hold investors accountable to ask those companies who they invest in to pay attention to disability inclusion. And you can see on our website, the disabilityequalityindex.org website, there are links to investor statements and the Accenture research that we invite you to read and download and spread far and wide as we continue to spread the word about the importance and the benefits of disability inclusion in the workplace and in society. As I had promised, the upcoming key dates are listed here. So we're currently in the registration period for the 2020 Disability Equality Index. Companies are Fortune 1000 companies, AM Law 200 companies, and additional companies with 500 employees or more. However, if you're a smaller company, we invite you to still download the questions on our website, and you can start applying some of the questions to things that may be happening within your organization. There are definitely some practical steps you can take even in a smaller organization. Registration will officially close on January 31st, and then companies will receive access to the benchmark on February 3rd, and they'll have until April 10th to complete it. But a lot of companies are preparing now since they're able to download the questions in a PDF, Word, or Excel document, and they can start passing it around within the organization and get those answers. So once February 3rd comes around, they're ready to start inputting the information in the survey itself. Benchmark closes on April 10th, and then on July 15th, we'll announce the top scoring companies at our conference. Companies will receive their individual scores around the end of May, but that won't be published until July 15th. If they score 89, you're 100. We say this is a carrot, not a stick. We do not publish companies that are below 80 scoring, and we're just proud for them to be on the journey and get started. And we know that someday, if they stay committed, they will become a top scoring company. As I've mentioned several times, the Disability Inc. Conference is taking place from July 13th through 16th in 2020 at the Ritz-Carlton and JW Marriott Grand Lakes in Orlando, Florida. It's a great opportunity for companies to share best practices with others in their industry, others in other industries, engage with the disability community who also attends. We have a next-gen leader program, whether students or recent graduates in the STEM, finance, or business fields who are actually hired on site at our conference. And then there's different tracks. There's a supplier diversity track, a technology track, marketplace track. So you can really focus on some of these things that may be of interest to you, all related to disability inclusion in business. There's also a Disability Quality Index breakout session that will be taking place along with the top scorer reception that takes place before our dinner on the 15th, and then the actual dinner where we announce the top scoring companies. And registration for 2021 for the Disability Quality Index will open before this conference, but it's a great way to get committed and get excited and learn from other peers. And then this last slide is my information, but I know that we have a lot of time left, and I would love to just answer any questions, anything that may be on someone's mind related to the index, how I can help clarify anything that may be on someone's mind. Happy to take any questions.
All right, Becky, thank you very much. Justin, if you would rejoin us and give our telephone participants instructions on how they can ask questions. As a reminder, folks in the webinar platform, you can continue to submit your questions in the chat area. You will not see your question when it is submitted, but it is viewable by the moderator. So, Justin, please.
Yes, sir. As a reminder, to ask a question, you will need to press star 1 on your telephone. To withdraw your question, press the pound key. And again, that's star 1 on your touch-tone telephone. And please stand by. We compile the Q&A roster.
All right. Thank you, Justin. Becky, as we wait for additional questions to come in, just as a starter, can you give us the history, the mission, the purpose of a disability in for participants that may not be familiar with disability in, how that began, where it started, where it is now, and the role that it plays in increasing addressing employment of people with disabilities.
Yes. So I mentioned how I've been with Disability Inn for a little over a year and a half, but there are definitely a lot of great efforts that have been going on for a very long time. Disability In used to be called United States Business Leadership Network before it was under the President's Committee, focusing on disability inclusion, and it's really meant to help business engage with the disability community and be more inclusive, where businesses partner for disability inclusion. The reason we changed our name, it was actually our conference last year in 2018, we went from United States Business Leadership Network to Disability In because disability was nowhere in our name, and we also knew that we wanted to go beyond our borders as we continue to work on these disability inclusion efforts. And we also wanted to strengthen the word disability. We try to be very broad when we talk about disability. We are referring to how disability is defined in the Americans with Disabilities Act when we do our trainings, and we want people to know that no disability should be left behind. So you will see even in the index that we try to be as broad as possible, even though some questions may be more helpful to some communities than others. So our supplier diversity program, that came about because business came to us and said, there are all these small businesses coming to us, but we don't know if they're legit. Then that's when we decided we'll host our own certification. And then companies began to build a level of trust with these certified businesses. The Next Gen Leader Program, similar thing. Businesses came to us and said, where do we find the talent now that we're ready to hire the talent? And we work with them to mentor and get people ready to work. We have monthly webinars. So our corporate partners, we have over 185 corporate partners, and they're able to participate in monthly webinars, an online portal where they have multiple resources. We also have an Inclusion Works program, which is a deep dive consulting practices. It's a 3-year commitment, but we hand-hold as much as companies may need to help them on whatever goals they may have. And they also get together with other companies within the Inclusion Works group to share best practices twice a year in person, one at our conference and usually something on the West Coast in January. And then we've had over 25,000 hires among those companies of people with disabilities. And they're also working on efforts to get at those people who may have been in their career a little longer and want to look towards retention and advancement. And we are continuously working with companies, especially through the month of October for National Disability Employment Awareness Month. A lot of companies who are getting started on the disability inclusion journey start with hosting an event this month. We have an ERG, BRG committee. We have a procurement council, which focuses on supplier diversity. We have a global roundtable, companies coming together to share global best practices. And then we have the DEI advisory committee. I invite everyone to check out our website, disabilityin.org, and you will see a plethora of resources to learn more about what we're doing.
Excellent. Thank you for that history and providing an overview so people understand, where the Disability Equality Index fits into, you know, the overall mission and purpose of what Disability In is doing. Someone wanted a clarification on the number of employees a company needs to have in order to participate in the index.
It must be 500 employees or more.
Okay. And was there a particular reason? Was that done for research purposes? Is there a reason behind that particular number?
We worked very closely with the Human Rights Campaign on their criteria for the Corporate Equality Index. And we also have to think about how you measure a 40,000-person company up against a 2-person company. We have to kind of pick a number where they could really manage the process of filling out the tool as well. The first year a company participates, it'll take 30 to 40 hours to fill out, and you want to make sure you have the manpower to do that as well.
Excellent. And you did say that smaller employers or companies with fewer employees can still download and use the questions to help drive their disability diversity and inclusion.
Absolutely. That's why we try to make everything as transparent as possible. And there are also best practices that they can see as well on our website.
And that was another question that Becky, you know, are the companies, the businesses that participate in the index, as you mentioned, not everyone, you know, scores 100, and that, you know, it's the carrot approach. So for those companies that don't score 100, or even for the ones that do score 100, are there resources that are provided for the, you know, the different categories, you know, cultural and reasonable accommodation process and you know, accessible technology? Are the companies provided with resources to help them work on those particular areas?
Absolutely. So a lot of times a company may come and say, we're struggling to answer this question or understand what it means, and I'll go through it with them and also share some samples, confidential samples of an appropriate way to answer that question if that's where they're stuck. But then there may also be times where they just don't know how to implement whatever the question is asking, and I will connect them with other companies who have made more progress in that specific area. With the company's permission, they connect and hopefully can guide each other. And then resources just in general, always happy to share best practices, basically customized to whatever a company may be wanting to focus on or struggling with.
Okay, and a question about the community engagement. You had the category that talked about accessibility of websites, both internal, external, inward facing, outward facing, and what was the first one to know? What was the decision to include the accessibility of social media under that community engagement category and not the other category that's looking at website accessibility?
That's a great question. I think that it's more thinking about attracting customers versus internally within an organization. There are the online portals and there's an online chat function, but there's not necessarily like an internal Twitter or internal Facebook, I guess, unless it is Facebook. But you'd want to still think about engaging with the community within the organization, but it's meant to be kind of two-pronged in community engagement externally and internally. And that was the place where it sits for now, but doesn't mean that it can't change in the future.
Sure, absolutely. And have you, not personally, but has the organization been tracking the companies that have, once they've done the index once, that they come back a second or third year? And I know that this is the fifth year that the index was offered, but have you seen, you know, once an employer participates in the Equality Index once, that they come back versus the percentage of companies that do it one time and then don't return for a second or third year?
Absolutely, especially now. In another new feature in 2019 is that if you take the index once, you'll be able to pre-populate your answers in the next year. Of course, we require you to still go through and take your time filling it out, making sure you make updates where appropriate, but it cuts down a little bit on the timeline once you have that first year where you gather all of the information. And I think that has been an attractive feature. Also, I've just seen that companies, once they do commit and get that permission internally to go for it, they're going to get that support year after year. And really, unless they score really low, they won't question participating again. But it's important for them to know that if they continue to stay committed, that'll show ways to improve.
Okay, great. And we have a question. I think it's related to something that you mentioned when going through the category. Someone wanted to know, how do personality screening tests have an impact on the hiring process for people with disabilities?
Even though I said we're pretty broad about talking about disability as a whole, people who may struggle with some social skills may struggle with a personality profile screening test, and it doesn't necessarily mean that they're not going to be able to do the job well. So there have been people within even Next Gen Leader in the past had applied to a company and failed that test and had to wait a whole year to be able to apply to that company again. And we're just trying to figure out how to prevent future barriers for a job that someone may be able to do really well, and that was the one hurdle.
Well, thank you. All right, a couple different pieces to this question. Have any public entities approached disability, and public as in state or local governments, and, you know, wanting to use the tool to measure, you know, their employment practices?
Yes, absolutely. But currently it is not open to the federal government, so it's for non-government entities. But it doesn't prevent anyone from downloading the questions and starting to apply things within the organization, no matter what the structure may be.
Okay. And do you track or know whether you're seeing federal contractors, you know, to the non-government entities, but that have, you know, obligations under, you know, Department of Labor, you know, rules regarding, you know, that targeted employment rate of 7% of, you know, employees with disabilities. Have you seen, you know, those federal contractors looking to increase their, you know, their efforts in employing people with disabilities by using the index?
Absolutely. A large percentage of participants thus far have been federal contractors.
Okay. Where are we on to? The you talked about that you're seeing that you've seen some trends over the 5 years that you've got you know, a good amount of data to look at over that time. So can you talk about some of those trends and some of the things that the data has shown for the employers that have participated in the index thus far?
Absolutely. I think employers are starting to attract more potential employees with disabilities by proving that they're committed. Companies are starting to pay more attention to the fact that it's important for your website to be equally accessible internally facing as outward facing. We're starting to be able to track based on that required hiring goal for federal contractors. Companies are starting to measure and figure out how to get employees to feel more comfortable and trust the employer to open up about their disability, so then the proper accommodations can be provided. I think sometimes there are people who do request accommodations but don't necessarily identify as having a disability. So figuring out how to navigate that piece of the culture. Businesses are starting to learn that there are some great disability-owned businesses, service-disabled veteran-owned businesses, that are really great to work with, and we're seeing that companies are engaging in that space. More employees with disabilities are being hired based on the mentoring and relationships that we've been able to form through the organization. We were able to find out through the DEI this past year that 3.2% on average of employees who are new employees identify as having a disability, and 3.7% of existing employees have a disability. Ideally, we get to that 7%, but again, this is an average among companies who are and are not federal contractors. And I think just overall, companies are paying attention because they know that disability can be a part of someone's life at any point in time, and now is the time to focus on making sure disability is included in all the diversity and inclusion conversations and every conversation.
And Becky, can you go back to those numbers that you, the 3.2% and the 3.7%? Where does that come from? Are you talking about employers that have participated in the index, and how are they arriving at those numbers? Is that something that's part of the index?
Great question. So the companies taking part in the 2019 DEI represent a total U.S. workforce of almost 8.7 million. And then on average, 3.2% of new hires identify as having a disability, whereas 3.7% of current employees identified as having a disability.
And those numbers are coming from that 8.7 million, the employers, the companies that are participating in the index.
Correct.
That's one of the questions. And as part of the index, and this was a question that I had myself, are employers, the non-federal contract employers, are employers encouraged to do to survey existing employees to try to identify, how many employees they have working currently that have disabilities?
So, do you mind just repeating that again?
Sorry. So is part of the index, or is there anything that encourages or suggests or recommends that employers participate in the index, survey their current employees to try to get a handle on the number of employees that they currently have who are persons with disabilities?
So there's just either employee engagement survey or self-ID campaigns.
The question is sort of, I guess one way to measure, the effectiveness of a company's efforts to increase diversity, increase their employment of people with disabilities is knowing at one point, at a starting point, how many employees we have with disabilities. And then, 8 years down the road, 10 years down the road, 5 years down the road, after we've implemented these different things and done the index, is there a change? Do we now employ more people with disabilities than we did previously? So that was sort of where my question was going. Are employers encouraged to find out, a baseline of how many employees they currently have with disabilities?
Okay. I think it's really a lot of it is storytelling. So as the company continues to participate, people who get involved with the disability-related employee resource group, the more people spend time together, I think the more it may come out that someone has a disability if they're able to feel a level of trust. And I think just hand in hand, the commitment to the index year after year encourages employees, maybe indirectly or directly, to start feeling more comfortable talking about their disability, and then that can help bring the numbers up.
And the data thus far and the trends that you talked about, has it's AAPD or is disability in, is that being accessed by policymakers, in a different realm to develop, policies at the federal or local levels, state levels, to address employment issues impacting people with disabilities?
We try to, our approach historically has been companies are committing to participation in the index, and they can work with the government in any which way they may want to. But as far as us working directly with the government to make these changes, that's not part of our wheelhouse at this time.
All right, great.
If more companies are implementing these changes and it starts a trend, anything could happen, if that makes sense.
Yep, absolutely. And another question someone had submitted in the webinar platform was wanting to know if there's any list of a list by state of employers, of companies that are, looking to, proactively outreach to the to people with disabilities and hire people with disabilities?
So with the Fortune list, it's not public facing, that information. Sometimes people may come to me and ask who's a top scoring company in the state, kind of a one-off, but it would be good to just kind of go through the companies and identify, of the top scoring list, identify which companies one knows has a big presence in their state, or you can look up on the Fortune list. It always shows people's headquarters. So there are ways to navigate, but even if it's not a headquarters, take a big retailer, for example, like Walgreens or CVS Health, you can recognize that they are an employer in your local area, since even if it's not the headquarters. So I usually have companies take a look at that top scoring list and identify those that you know have a presence and go after them that way.
Okay. Question, whether related to the index or, stories and your work within disability, have you seen, companies that are part of disability in, change the way that they think about, some of their positions, their jobs, in terms of people with disabilities and doing things differently, whether it's job sharing or a company that previously didn't really look at telework or work from home. So just any examples or thoughts on that area of where employers participate in the index or employers affiliated part of disability in, looking at their jobs differently, as part of their efforts to hire people with disabilities.
Absolutely. I think being a part of Disability Inn and even attending our conference, there are a lot of light bulb moments and changes that are able to happen. I think the more we engage with people, the point person we may engage with, they can start navigating their organization. We help them with talking points and connecting with people at higher levels within an organization. And when they bring learnings and best practices back to their organization after our conference, we've definitely seen a lot of change happen. And I think it's just the more we get more companies committed the more change will happen and it'll become the norm.
Excellent. And that's that peer to peer dynamic, right? That disability is all about of, you know, employers teaching other employers, you know, best practices and the values of hiring and employing people with disabilities.
Absolutely.
All right. Someone wanted, if you could go over the, if you have the data for the top companies from the 2018 compared to the 2019, and if there are companies that you know continue to score well, or if that changes from year to year, and someone wanted a recap on the top 2019 companies, if you could.
So on our website, you can download the list, the top scoring list from 2015 to 2019. But I will say that because supplier diversity was not weighted in 2018 and then was weighted in 2019, companies did lose points. There were some companies that went down in score because they hadn't built out their supplier diversity department or initiative. And then also enterprise-wide access, the web content accessibility guidelines in June of 2018 went from 2.0 to 2.1, and we also made sure that companies were up to par with that as well. So I would say that companies, some went backwards in enterprise-wide access, and now we're giving companies a chance to continue to work on those initiatives going into this 2020 survey year.
And so that's interesting. You have the group that is continually looking at the index and, you know, updating it. And you mentioned during your presentation that, companies are given a heads up, you know, a year's heads up before anything changes on that. Can you talk about the composition of the group that looks at the index and the questions? I think you said that 50% are your business partners and 50% are your corporate advocates. So if you could talk about the composition of that group, and are there, you know, researchers in there and other policymakers that you know, help drive the index so that, you know, that it's effective in providing information and data and that's useful to the exercise, which is ultimately the employment of people with disabilities.
That's a great question. So I invite everyone to go to the DEI website, and you can see the full breakdown of those people who participate on the committee. I would say that there are people at all different levels of an organization, but it's equally as important to have the advocates in the room across disabilities to be able to speak to what's important to them, but then business is able to share their perspective on what may be a shorter-term versus longer-term goal realistically based on how organizations are structured. And not all organizations are structured the same. I think it's just important to know that there are people thinking about it and also asking their colleagues who may not necessarily serve on the committee, who work in the appropriate departments, and will continue to bring in people from different areas of organizations to help us strengthen some of the categories that we haven't made changes to. And we will continue to listen to the committee and those who may also have feedback, and we invite people to read all the questions and tell us what could be stronger, keeping in mind that this is specifically an employment tool. I know we have that community engagement category, but it's really about employment of people with disabilities, and we know there's a lot of work to do in all areas of companies, inward and outward facing, but we're really just focusing on the employment piece and preventing barriers to employment for people with disabilities across every organization.
Okay, thanks for that that answer. Becky, was a question, a clarification about the data. Someone wants to know, can a company, employer, participate in the index and keep their data private?
The data is always private. I would be the only one that would see the information as the administrator and the survey or the benchmark developer. As far as if you score 89 or 100, we would encourage you to be proud of that and have your company name published. But really, as you'll even see in the Disability Equality Index report, it's a compilation of data and stats based on all company responses. So there's nothing that specifically calls out a particular company for doing this, that, or the other thing. So I would say that the data is analyzed, but it's not outward-facing, talking about your organization and what you're doing and not doing.
Okay. And then we had a question come in looking for a clarification on the group that looks at the index and the corporate advocates. So are those individuals employees of the companies that are members of Disability In? Is that where that 50% comes from?
Yes.
And are they're recruited by Disability In, or are the companies that are part of Disability In recruit their own employees to become part of that group?
We ask the person if they're expressing interest. They then sometimes have to get approval from someone else within their organization to sign off on committee participation. But it's usually people who express interest and are a fit basically can fill a need that we may not have filled previously. Like we recently added someone who works as a researcher within an organization. We've had one of the co-chairs is a chief diversity officer. They sit in all different roles, but also have to express interest in order to make meaningful contributions to the committee.
Excellent. And someone had a question about the number of employers that just participated in the most recent index, the 2019. And you said that was the most that has completed it thus far.
Correct. So in 2019, we had 180, and then before that, in 2018, we had 145, and in 2017, we had 110.
That participated. And a follow-up question to that, was there a pushback regarding completing the index because of the amount of time and how in-depth it was, and you know, how was that sold, the getting the companies to actually participate in doing the index?
Yes, I will say there was a bit of a drop-off. There were companies who committed to participate, and there were several that decided not to continue based on the commitment and time that it took. There's a lot of turnover in organizations, especially in D&I roles, who usually are responsible for filling out the tool. It doesn't have to be that person, but it's really who steps up within an organization and takes that leadership position for filling out all the answers. And that sometimes prevents a company from staying committed. But I would say that we are having some positive perspectives for those companies who said they were going to back out, but then will commit again this coming year. So we're just always on a journey with companies and at the end of the day, it's the company's decision to stay committed throughout the whole route because we can't fill it out on their behalf, and they need to stay on top of it and committed and make the deadline so we can keep everything on schedule.
And do you collect any data, or do you have a ballpark figure of how long it takes a company to complete the survey and you know, track down the information and provide, you know, any additional information as part of the survey to you?
It's estimated 30 to 40 hours, but it really depends on communication across departments within an organization. And that's why we make the questions publicly available so people can get those answers that they need before it's time to complete the tool.
Right. All right. And Justin, do we have any questions on the telephone at this time?
No, sir.
All right. Thank you, sir. All right. Becky, sort of a comment statement that came in, and with that, I'll ask for your thoughts. But, you know, we know that in general, the nation's at, you know, a pretty historic low unemployment rates, and the unemployment rate for people with disabilities is still, you know, percentage points higher than the unemployment rate for people without disabilities, but you know, the real number is, you know, what's the employment rate, not the unemployment rate. So how many people with disabilities are actually participating in the that are actually employed, and that's where you see a much more significant difference between, you know, an employment rate of, you know, over 70% for people without disabilities and somewhere around, you know, 30% or in that range for people, you know, with disabilities. So, with regards to the work that Disability Inn is doing, you know, what are the next steps? What needs to be done? Whether to increase that employment rate for people with disabilities. We know that, you know, baby boomers are retiring and will continue to retire at increasingly higher rates, which is going to leave a large void for employers out there, and we know that there's this huge untapped pool of people with disabilities out there. So, what are the next steps of moving that untapped pool from the ranks of, you know, unemployed or underemployed, you know, to employed?
I know
it's a large question for you.
Being intentional about inclusion and not being afraid to ask for help. We have a lot of great resources within our organization. Our conference keeps growing year after year. People are getting hired at our conference. I think if we continue this trend, it's only going to get better. As we celebrate the 30th anniversary of the ADA, as I said, investors are now paying attention. We're really wanting companies to take this seriously because it really is an untapped talent pool, and if we fill a lot of those vacant jobs, the return on investment will be powerful.
And that data and the trend that you've seen over the years that the Disability Index has been used, is that provided back to not just the folks that participate in the index, but just Disability Inn and business in general, as to, you know, these are the positive benefits of, you know, employing and reaching out to the disability community?
Absolutely. I encourage everyone to read the Accenture report. You can go to the Disability Equality Index website to download it, and you will see best practices that those companies who are doing well are practicing and setting a standard that other companies should also work towards.
And as we're getting close to our finish here, you've mentioned that you've seen increased participation in the index over the years. Has there been increased growth in disability in general from year to year? Are new companies, new employers, you know, coming on as they, you know, recognize the work that disability is doing? And you know, we'd like to think that everyone does everything because it's the right thing to do, but you know, oftentimes that's not the reason. Oftentimes it's the bottom line, the almighty dollar that drives things. So is disability in seeing, you know, a growth as companies recognize, you know, not just the right thing, but also, you know, that bottom line benefit of hiring people with disabilities?
Absolutely. We're growing. Our conference this past summer had 2,000 people. We're expecting more in 2020. Index participation grows. You do not have to be a corporate partner of Disability Inn to participate in the index. There is a $600 fee, but companies do pay it because it's really just the administrative fee of the tool itself. And a lot of times that is the way to bring people into the pipeline. They commit to the index, figure out what they want to focus on, and then engage with Disability Inn as a partner to help them advance.
Is the conference open to non-members, or is that just for?
Yes, absolutely. Registration should be opening in the coming months. Conference.disabilityinn.org is a great place to go and get updates
on that. Well, excellent. We are going to wrap up our session today. I want to thank Becky for joining us, not just for your time today presenting, but want to join you for the time you spent, you know, preparing for today's session. It is truly appreciated. So as a reminder, today's session has been recorded, and the archive will be posted within 24 hours to the ada-audio.org website, and we'll have an edited transcript that will go up in about 2 weeks' time once that has been edited. So want to thank everyone for participating today as we continue our 2019-2020 audio conference season. November, we will again be focusing on employment as we march towards the 30th anniversary of the signing of the Americans with Disabilities Act. We will have a session on leave under the ADA and FMLA leave, still a hot topic when it comes to the ADA. Well, we have Joe Bonke with the EEOC, the U.S. Equal Employment Opportunity Commission, will be our speaker. Please note that there is a special date that will take place on November the 12th, and you can find registration information on ada-audio.org for that upcoming sessions and other sessions in the audio conference series that are posted already. If you have questions, you can give us a call at 877-232-1990. If you want to get information about your regional ADA center, again, visit ada-ta.org. One last question, Becky, if I could get this in before we sneak out here. Someone wanted to know, are there any entities that certify organizations as businesses being disability-owned or veteran disability-owned businesses?
Yes, that's Disability Inn. Check out our website and you can go to the tab that says Supplier Diversity and learn more there. So disabilityinn.org, and then you can go to what we do. Just scroll down to Supplier Diversity, and you'll get all of the information there.
Excellent, excellent. Well, thank you very much again, Becky, for joining us. Thank you to all of our participants. You will receive an email with a link to an evaluation for today's session. We encourage you to complete the evaluation. That helps us with our programming and planning for future sessions. So please complete that. We look forward to having you join us in November and for all of our future sessions. Thanks again to everyone. Take care and good day.
Ladies and gentlemen, this concludes today's conference. Thank you for participating. You may all now disconnect. Speakers, please stand by.